On the top of Tzadi Vav Omid Aleph, we finished up with Haber Rav Ravei, Haber Zutri, Omer Rav Asi, Shonin, they teach in a Braisa, Klicheres, Shi'uro Bekones Mashke. In other words, a small hole will be Mafkir the Shem Kli if it's large enough for liquids to seep into the Kli from the outside. That's called Kones Mashke. V'lo Amru Motzi Mashke, and when they speak about enough to let liquid out, and that's even the smallest hole could let liquid drip out on the bottom to get them on the inside from the outside, that's already a larger hole. Elinyun Gistera Bilvat. Gistera, we said, was a shard. My taima. In other words, why does a hole that is too small to be mafkia the kli of its status as a kli, why is it, nevertheless, it deprives the shard, this gustra, of its status? Omer bar Zutra, breder of Nachman Fisher, ein omrim have gistra le gistra. In other words, if the shard is not enough to hold back any liquid that's leaking out, we're not going to say, a person doesn't say, bring another shard in order to supplement the first shard. Omar Ula, Pligi Batrei Amoroi B'marava, we have a Machlokas to Amoroim, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Ovin, Rabbi Yossi Bar Zavda, Chan Omar Kemotzi Rimon. Some say that the shear is Kemotzi Rimon, and a rimon could, that's how large the hole is. V'chanomar b'shoresh katan, it's a small root. V'simonach echan amar b'v'echad hamamet. Omer avchinino bar kahana mishmei de Rabbi Eliezer, klicheres shi'uro kemotzi zesim. So as far as an earthenware kli is, the shear has to be that the hole is large enough to let an olive get through, and that'll be mafkir the tuma. Umar mark shisha brei de rabba mesayim be mishmei de Rabbi Eliezer arehen kikli glolim kli avonim kli adoma, and these are various types of vessels that are not baked in the oven. She'ein mekablim tuma, and they're not susceptible to tuma. Lo mi divrei Torah, lo mi divrei sofrim. Le'inyat somid haposil ad she'ipaches rubo. As we discussed before, Rava says that the shear for somid posil is rubo. If the majority of the utensil is broken off, then we no longer have the halacha of tzomid pasil. Hadron alecha matzniyah. So today's daf is daf tzadi vav amin aleph, and we'll begin perek hazorek with the mishnah on daf tzadi vav amin aleph. A few words of background of information here for the 11th perek. We have hotzom mishus harabim lishus hayachid, back and forth, one mishus to the other, and in that case you're carrying something. Our mishnah and our perek is dealing with a case where you're throwing something, and that would mean either you threw it from one rishus to another rishus, it landed in the second rishus, or he threw it from the beginning of four amos in rishus harabim to the end of four amos rishus harabim. And the gemara here is going to try to derive Zrika, throwing, from the Mishkan. And what's unique about Melechas Hotzah amongst the 39 Melechas is that this is a Melecha that requires establishing exactly where in the Torah prohibited it, or at least to have a very strong Svara, to have an analogy, let's say, between taking something from a Rishus Harabim into Rishus Hayochid, taking something out of Rishus Hayochid and putting it down in Rishus Harabim. Zrika will also require that we find a precedent in the Mishkan So let's begin. Hazorek Mirshus HaYochid L'Shus HaRabim O Mirshus HaRabim L'Shus HaYochid Chayev. So it means that we have the Av Malach of Hotzah when he carries something, and we have the Told of Hotzah when he throws something. In both cases, we have an Akira in one Rishus, a Hanocha in another Rishus. The only question is, how do you bridge between the Akira and the Hanocha? In the case of Hotzah, he carries it. In the case of Zriki, he throws it. The Mishnah continues. Hazorek, if he throws something, Mishus HaYochid, Mishus HaYochid, Mishus HaRabim Be'emtza. Now, normally, when you throw or carry something from one Mishus HaYochid directly into another Mishus HaYochid, for sure you're not Chayev. But here, in the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, you will be Chayev, because between one Rishus HaYochid and another Rishus HaYochid, we have a Rishus HaRabim. And since he takes the object through a Rishus HaRabim and puts it down into a Rishus HaYochid, he's Chayev for that. The Chachomim potrim. However, the Chachomim reject this, and they believe that since he started in Rishus HaYochid and he ended in Rishus HaYochid, the Malacha really comprises this Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaYochid. The Rishus HaRabim Be'emtza is not enough to be Machayev. Okay, Ketzad. Now, we're talking about the Shita of the Chachomim in our Mishnah. And what we're going to see is that the Chachomim differentiate between what's called Moshit and Zrika, and throwing. Moshit means when I stretch out my arm. And the case of Moshit is a very unique one, because when I'm holding on to something and I stretch out my arm, I'm holding it in Rishus HaYochid, and I'm going to hand it over to you. You're also in Rishus HaYochid. There's a Rishus HaRabim in the middle. And let's imagine that your apartment is a little bit of, let's say we're going out to the porch, and you have a porch and I have a porch. The porch is a Rishus HaYochid. And I go out to my porch, I stretch out my arm with an object in it, and I pass it over to your porch. And that's called, in the language of the Mishnah, Shtei Gizutraos. So gustros are these verandas that come off the apartment. You'll see it very often in Europe, here also in Israel. And in such a case, if it's zo keneged zo, the two verandas are on the same side, and they are organized one parallel to the other, so I'm just, in a sense, passing it forward. And Rishus, right? And Bishnei Tzadi Rishus HaRabim. It means that between my veranda and yours, there's a Rishus HaRabim. Is then a Moshit V'azorek Mizu Lizu Potur, but Hayushteim B'Duta Achas HaMoshit Chayev V'azorek Potur. So we have two porches, two gizutraos. And now the question is, if there's a Rishus HaRabim between these two porches, what is the organization? In what order, shall we say, are these two verandas organized? And there are two possibilities. You can have both gizutraos on one side of Rishus HaRabim, or you could have them on two different sides of Rishus HaRabim. And the Mishnah makes a fundamental difference between these two cases. Let's go through the two cases. They're both cases of Moshit, where an object is being passed on from one Rishus HaYochid to another Rishus HaYochid. The recipient is totally passive. I mean, he just receives the object. The active person who passes it to him, he's doing the action, and he's, in a sense, depositing that object into the hands of his his neighbor who's in the next door veranda. Now, you can have these two verandas lined up on one side of a Shusha Rabim, or you can have two apartments, two houses that are on two sides of a Shusha Rabim. And in both cases, you're passing, which is called Moshit, the object from one to another, from one Rishu Sayyachid to another Rishu Sayyachid. However, what we have to do is we have to go back to the Mishkan. The Mishkan is going to serve as our paradigm. So let's read the last part of our Mishnah and then we'll go backwards. Shekach hoisa avodas halevim. We have to understand what was the nature of the avodah of the Levim. And one of the three branches of Shevet Levi was called the Merari. The Merari branch, that family, was in charge of bringing the krushim, which are the beams that make up the structure of the Mishkan, to the Mishkan. And in what way did they do this? So the Mishnah tells us, it was shtei agalot, zo achar zo b'rshus harabim, u'moshitim hakroshim mizo lezo. So what we have is wagons, which are called agalot, agolos. You've got two wagons, one in front of the other. There's another two wagons to the left that are also one in front of the other. And so you have all told four wagons. Now, the wagons are organized in such a way that two wagons on the right, there's one behind that's a little further from the Mishkan, and there's one up front that's closer to the Mishkan. So we take the krushim. Somebody is standing on the ground. The ground here is Rishus HaRabim. He passes these beams over to a person in the back agola, the rear agola, who in turn will stretch his arm out and pass the beam to someone who's in the front agola, the wagon, and then that person now is going to give the beams over to someone who is right next to the Mishkan and is going to start building the Mishkan. In the case of taking apart the Mishkan, then the entire process is just, it's the same but in reverse order. Now what's important to understand is that there were two agalot on one side, one in front of the other, and then there were two agalot, let's say, to its left, on one in front of the other. They never passed the beams from the right to the left. They always passed it from the back forward. And that's called Moshit. Moshit means, now we go back to the language of the Mishnah, Shteyem Bidyuta Achas. Both of these gizustros, both of these verandas, are on the same side of Rishus HaRab. Just like the rear agola would pass the beam over to the front agola, so too, if you pass an object from your veranda, which is Rishus HaYochid, to the front veranda, which is also Rishus HaYochid, there's Rishus HaRabim in between, for Moshit Yechayev. Now, never did they throw the beams, so there's no precedent in the Mishkan for Zorek Mirshus HaYochid Rishus HaYochid Derech Rishus HaRabim. However, Rabbi Akiva has a unique Shita, and according to his Shita, we apply a principle called Yalfinan Zorek Mimoshit, that even though in the Mishkan they didn't do this Zrika to get the beams closer to the Mishkan, they only did Moshit. But nevertheless, Rabbi Akiva says we can learn the basic structure of this malacha and apply it and extend it from the actual case of Moshit to the case of Zorik. But the Chachamim never bought into that. We are absolutely bound by this Mishkan scenario in which it was Moshit and not Zorik.
Therefore, if you would have two homes, both of which are Rishus HaRab, Rishus HaYochid, on two sides of Rishus HaRab, a highway that goes through them, if you would be moshed from one Rishus HaYochid over the Rishus HaRabim to the next Rishus HaYochid, you'd not be chayev. There's no precedent for that in the Mishkan. Because as we said before, the Mishkan, they never passed it from one agola on this side over the Rishus HaRabim to an agola on that side. They only passed it forward, in which it went from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaYochid over the airspace of Rishus HaRabim. That's called moshed. Now we have to understand one more thing. The agolos were each one a Rishus HaYochid. And the reason for that is that a Rishus HaYochid requires two dimensions, two requirements. One of them is the width, and the other is the height. The width has to be 4 tfachim square, and the height has to be 10 tfachim high. And the agolos met those two conditions. They were on the one end 4 tfachim wide, and they were 10 tfachim high. Now, one of the issues that's going to come up here is that in Moshit, since he's standing on the agola, holding the beam and passing it over, then by definition, the beam is going above 10 tfachim, because as we said before, the height of the agola is 10 tfachim. Now, we have a rule that Rishus HaRabim only goes up to 10 tfachim. Above 10 tfachim, it's no longer Rishus HaRabim. So when the Mishnah talks about Shteim Bidyuta Achas, HaMoshed Chayav, and the reason is because there's a hefsek, there's a between the two, sandwiched in between the two diotos, meaning between the two Rishus HaYochids, we have a Rishus HaRabim that's wedged in between, sandwiched in between. Keep in mind that the object is really just passing over the Rishus HaRabim. It doesn't really enter Rishus HaRabim per se. Okay, that's the Mishnah. And our challenge today is to learn the Sugyas HaGemara, which is here on Daf Tzadivav Amid Beis. The Gemara wants to know, where is the source for Zrika? As we said before, when it comes to Meleches Hotzah, which is unique in the constellation of Melachos, we need a lot, until we prove that Melacha is a Melacha. And the Gemara says, Michti Zrika tolda da Hotzahi, Hotzah Gufa Hechi Ksiva. In other words, let's go back to basics. The Mishnah establishes, first Mishnah in Perek HaZorik, that one who throws something from Rishus to Rishus is Chayev. That's going to be a tolda of Hotzah. So let's go back to Hotzah. Hotzah Gufa Hechi Ksiva. In other words, as opposed to the other 38 Malachas on the list, which are established as Malachas simply because they're in the Mishkan, Hotzah has an additional requirement. In order to pass the bar and incorporate Hotzah into the constellation of Malachos, give it that status of an Avmalacha, there has to be a source in the Torah. Because, they did a lot of different things in the Mishkan, right? And not everything they did in the Mishkan is by definition a Malacha. I mean, that which is creative, it's a labor, and it builds the Mishkan. But Hotzah is not really part of the building of the Mishkan. So before we get to Mishkan, let's see if we can find some source in the Torah for the Av Malacha of Hotzah. Then, once establishing Hotzah as the Av Malacha, then we'll be ready to move on to stage 2 and derive toldos. So let's first derive the Av of Hotzah. Amar Rav Yochanan, the Amar Kra. Now what happens here is that Moshe Rabbeinu is now, this actually takes place on the 11th of Tishrei, right after Moshe Rabbeinu brings down the second set of Luchos with the message of Salachti on the 10th of Tishrei. The next morning, he lets out a clarion call to the people of Israel to bring forward their contributions for building the Mishkan. And as we always like to say, this was the most successful fundraiser in all of history, because at one point the people were bringing too much for the Mishkan, and Moshe Rabbeinu had to say stop. And that's the pasuk here in Shmos Lamed Vav, Vayitzav Moshe. I'm going to read the entire pasuk, some of which is written in the Gemara, some is not. Vayaviru kol b'machne lemor ish ish al yasu od melacha l'trumas hakodesh and vayikolei ha'am mihavi. Moshe sends out a call to tell the people, you know what? That's it. We have as much as we need. Baruch Hashem, the contributions were flowing. We don't need any more of your contributions to build the Mishkan. And therefore, Yasu od, don't bring anything more. And in the as a response, Vayikolei ha'am mihavi, they stopped bringing their gifts. Now, there are a few questions that we have to ask. When this episode took place and Moshe Rabbeinu enjoined the people from bringing more, what day of the week was? Number two, where was Moshe situated? Number three, where were the people situated? So the Gemara is going to now, in the name of Yochanan, answer all these questions. Number one, Moshe Eichan Havi Yosef, where was Moshe sitting when he told the people, don't bring me any more contributions? B'machna Leviyah. He was sitting in the Machna Leviyah, which is the area in which the Beis HaMikdash would be the Mishkan would be built. And what's the status of Machna Leviyah? Machna Leviyah, because Moshe Rabbeinu was there, and the people constantly flocked or gravitated to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Ramban goes into great detail in his commentary on the Torah about how people were waiting online to meet Moshe Rabbeinu and to talk to him for many, many different reasons, in some cases even to pray on behalf of their sick. And therefore the Machna Leviyah, where Moshe Rabbeinu was situated, was a Rosh Hasharabim Havi. The status of Rosh Hasharabim is because the people of Israel were there. They came to the Machna Leviyah to greet Moshe Rabbeinu, to meet Moshe Rabbeinu. And this touches on an issue here about what defines a Rosh Hasharabim, how many people will go through that area during the course of a day. Rashi Shita is that you need Shishim Ribu, you know, as many as 600,000 people. And the question is, you know, when the situation as described here, Moshe Rabbeinu is sitting in the Machna Leviyah, where there are as many as 600,000 people who would go to meet Moshe Rabbeinu in the Machna Leviyah. That's a question. But let's assume there were. Now, where are Klal Yisrael? Ka'amar Luhu Yisrael, Moshe tells the people of Israel, Lo Tafiku, don't go out with your contributions, you know, your gold, silver, etc., etc. V'tesu, because in effect you will be bringing it out of a Rishus HaYochid, Didchu, your Rishus HaYochid, and you'd be taking it out to the Machna Leviyah, which is a Rishus HaRabim. Don't do that. Because every Jew lived in what's called an Ohel, and every tent, which is like a private house, has the status of Rishus HaYochid. And if the people would continue to bring their contributions, they would be taking it from their tents, or Rosh HaYochid, out to the Machna Leviyah to hand this over to Moshe Rabbeinu, which is a Rosh HaRabim. How do you know that Moshe Rabbeinu told the people, don't bring it because it's Shabbos? Dilma, perhaps, I could be argumentative, Bechol Koi, it was a weekday, and all Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them was, Mishum Dishlima Le Malacha, we have enough Shalem, Lashlim, we don't need any more, we got whatever we need, we don't have any use for any surplus. Kiksiv, and I'll prove it to you, the very next pasuk says, V'amalacha Isadayam, that all that they brought was sufficient for the Melechas HaMishkan. So we need another proof that what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling the people was not just, well, we have enough contributions, don't bother bringing out any more. But rather, Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching them an Isur, that they're not allowed to bring out more, because if they do so, today is Shabbos, and they will violate the Malach of Hotzah by taking an object from Rishus HaYochid out to Rishus HaRab. So the answer is, we have a Gzeres Shavu. Gomar Havara Havara Miyom HaKippurim. The pasuk of Havara, or some conjugation thereof, that word Havara, appears in two psukim. It appears here in the parsha in Shmos Lamed Vav about the Mishkan. Ksiv Hocha, it says here, Vayaviru Kol Bamachne. And if you take this word Vayaviru, it is a conjugated verb of the noun Havara. So that's the root of this word is Havara. Ksiv Hosam. And now we're at the end of Sefer Vayikra, and we're talking about once in 7 years, Yom HaKippurim is going to be the day which initiates the Shemitah, and the pasuk describes that initiation of Shemitah by Vavarta Shofar Trua. We blow the shofar after Yom Kippur on that, you know, the end of the 6th year, going into the 7th year, and therefore we proclaim that this is the Shemitah year. Or after 7 cycles of 7 years, 49 years, we blow the shofar going into the 50th year, which is the year of Yovel. Most likely, if you look in the parasha, you'll get the impression that the Vavarta Shofar Trua was at the termination of the 49th year, going into the 50th year, and that blowing of the shofar was the initiation of the Yovel. And there's a mitzvah say to blow the shofar on the 10th of Tishrei, going into the year of Yovel. Now the Torah deliberately chooses the word Vavarta to describe the blowing of the shofar. And Malahalon, it's coming to teach us that just like Yom HaKippurim is a Yom Asur, we're enjoined from doing Malach on Yom HaKippurim, and the Torah used the word Vavarta, Afkan here too, Vayaviru Kol B'machne, B'Yom Asur, the date was Shabbos. So on Shabbos itself, when we're enjoined from doing Malacha like on Yom HaKippurim, the Torah says that Moshe commanded the people, don't bring anything more from the tents out to the Machlevia, because that would be a violation of Malacha Sotso. So now we have a source in the Torah for the Malacha of Hotso. The Gemara goes on and says, Ashkechan Hotso, Hachnosa Minolon. We know that you're chayav in two situations. The case of Moshe Rabbeinu and the people of Israel, that was a case of Hotzah. They were taking something out of Rishus HaYochid, out from Rishus HaYochid, out to the Rishus HaRabim. But what about the opposite direction? Hachnosa Minolan. What's the source for Hachnosa? Hachnosa means that you take the object from Rishus HaRabim into a Rishus HaYochid. That's the opposite direction of the case of Moshe and the gifts. And the Gemara answers, Svarahi. Once we've already broken ground and we have a source in the Torah for the Meleches Hotzah, now we can add a logic and say, Michti. Let's analyze it. What is this Hotzah? It's Mirshus Lirshusu. What you're accomplishing is Shinu Rishus. You're changing the Rishus. Therefore, Mali Lafuki, Mali Liyule. What difference it make if he's taking it from Rishus HaYochid out to Rishus HaRabim? That's called Afuke, to take it out. Iyuli means to take it in, which is called Achnosa. There's no reason or rhyme to limit Meleches Hotzah to the exact case of Rishus Rishus in the sequence of Moshe Rabbeinu, where they took it from the Oel, Rishus HaYochid out to Rishus HaRabim. It doesn't matter one iota which direction, and therefore Achnosa is also included in the Malach. Miu, however, one thing we have to establish, Hotsa Av, Vachnosa Tolada. The Av is written in the Torah, and that's the case of Moshe, Vayaviru Kol B'machne. Anything that you derive from the Av is a Tolda. And what that means is that Hachnosa is not an Av. The Nafkamina might be Again, this is something that we'll get to, Mirz Hashem, later on. Hasra, when you warn a person, don't do X because you're violating the Torah Isur, then it could be that you have to mention the Av Malach. You can't mention the name of the Told. So it's very important to know which is the Av and which is the Told. And the Gemara now is going to come up with an important linguistic interpretation or meaning in the words themselves called Av and Told. Michti. Let's analyze again. Ahomachayv, ahomachayv. Let's not fool ourselves. Just like you're chayv for an Av Malacha, which is a chayv skila b'mezin and a chayv chatas b'shogeg, you're equally chayv for a Tolda. So let's understand the meaning of the word Av and the meaning of the word Tolda. Why do you impress us with that distinction? Amai korile lahai av, amai korile lahai tolda. Why do you call this one an av? Meaning in the case of hotzah, hotzah, mirshus hayochid, out to rishus harab, you call it an av. Hachnasa, you call it tolda. So although the Gemara realizes that there may be some nafkiminas about the case of mezid, as we said before, what kind of hasra do you give? Do you have to mention the Av? Do you have to mention the Tolda? And there may be differences between the Av and the Tolda. The Gemara is pushing to try to find a nafkamina, a difference between calling something an Av and calling it a Tolda within the context of the Mishnah itself. When I say the Mishnah, I don't mean the Mishnah here in the 11th parak. I mean the Mishnah back in the 7th parak that lists the Malachos. And the Mishnah goes out of its way to limit its enumeration to the 39 Avos Malachos. Why is the Mishnah setting up these 39 categories? What's the import or the significance of setting up these 39 Malachos as your Avos to the exclusion of Toldos? And the Gemara answers, Nafkemina, there's a difference. The Ovid Shtei Avos Bahari Adadi, if let's say you forget it Shabbos, and you violate two different Avos under that one single Helem Echad, meaning one forgetfulness. And in such a case, since they're two different Avos, you're going to be Chayv two different Chatos, because each Av is a separate Isur. Inami, I'll give you another case where you'll be Chayv two Chatos. When you violate two malachos behelim achas, shtei toldos bahari adodi, you do two toldos that belong to two different malachos, mechayev tarti, has to bring two chatos. And this is the principle called malachos mechalkos, that different malachos set up a partition, so to speak, a distinction, and therefore you cannot kill two birds with one chatas, so to speak. You mean you have to bring a separate chatas for each one of these two malachos. However, if in the same halama, the same forgetfulness, you violated both the Av and its Tolda, lo machayev elechada. In other words, the violation of the Tolda is not going to add an additional chiyuv chatas because it's swallowed up by its Av. So it's very important to know the Av and the Tolda. Once I categorize something as an Av, it means that it's a malacha unto itself, it's an avera unto itself. Another av is going to be a different avera. If you do both avos, you'll have to bring two chatos. But if I classify something as a tolda, then what I'm really saying is that if I violate the tolda together with its av, then I've basically repeated the same malacha, just in a different form. And when you repeat the same avera, then you only bring one chatas, assuming that both were done under one haloma, one forgetfulness. Now, all this is true according to the Shita of the Chachamim, quoted at the beginning of Masechta Bava Kamma, of all places. But the Gemara quotes Rabbi Eliezer. He disagrees. He's the dissenting opinion. The Mechayev told him Mokamav. According to him, the told is a separate Isur, and it stands on its own. And therefore, if you violate both an Av and its Toldo, you have to bring two Chatos. And then once again, we're back to the question, am I Korile Av, am I Korile Toldo? Now, at this point, the Gemara is asking more of a linguistic question. We don't have right now the nafkemina between the Av and the Tolda that we had according to the Chachamim of Rabbi Eliezer. So in Rabbi Eliezer's frame of reference, if a Tolda has the same exact status as the Av, such that if you violate the Av and it's Tolda, you'll be Chayv Shtayim, then why do you call one an Av and why do you call another a Tolda? You must have some reason that this is called an Av, and we have 39 of them listed in the Mishnah, and this is called a Tolda. And the answer is, Hach da avi b'mishkan chashiva kari le'av, Hach da lo avi b'mishkan chashiva lo kari le'av. The answer is, we go back to the Mishkan. We have many different forms of labor, of categories of labor, and we can always ask which one is an Av, which one is a Tolda. And the answer is that the determining factor is going to be what they did in the Mishkan. What they did in the Mishkan is going to be an Av. And the word chashiva means that the very fact that it was part of the labor that was necessary to create, build the Mishkan, that gives it chashivas. That's its special significant status because it was used to build the Mishkan. Then you derive toldos. Those toldos were not in the Mishkan. According to Rabbi Eliezer, we upgrade the status of the tolda to be equal to that of the Av, but we call it a tolda because it's lacking that extra chashivus in that it was not done in the Mishkan. Inami, another answer to what's the difference between an Av and a tolda, hach dechsiva kari Av, hai deloksiva kari tolda. The Gemara is saying that if you find a malacha that's written in the Torah, that gives it the status of an Av. That which you don't find in the Torah, you just derive logically, because of its similarity to the Av, that's called a Tolda. Now the Ramban points out that this last answer is particularly applicable to Meleches Hotzah. And the difference between Hotzah and Achnasa is that Hotzah is written explicitly in the Torah, Vayaviru kol b'machne, Moshe Rabbeinu commands them not to take it out of the Rishus HaYochid out to the Rishus HaRabim, but Hachnos, on the other hand, is not explicit in the Torah. If you go with the first explanation of the difference between Av and Tolda, says the Ramban, that the Av is in the Mishkan and the Tolda is not, then it's very difficult to assume that Hachnos was not done in the Mishkan. Why? Because the Levim were in charge of collecting the gifts, and they took the gifts from the Machna Leviya, where they collected it, and that's Rishus Sarabim, and they gave it over to the Mishkan, which is a Rishus HaYochid. That's a case of Hachnasa. So that the second answer of the Gemara is going to be more appropriate when we're talking about why Hotzah is the Av and Achnos is the Tolda. The first answer, on the other hand, is more of a general statement that it would apply in general to all the Malachas, not specifically honed in on Hotzah. Okay, now we're up to our subject for today, and that's Zrika. V'hadisnan, we have a Mishnah, Hazorek Arba Amos Bikosel Lemala Measar Tvachim Kizorik Bi Avir But Zorkolomata Measar Tvachim Kizorik Baoretz Vazorik Baoretz Arba Amos Chayov. So we have a Mishnah. We didn't get to this Mishnah yet. This is the next Mishnah in Perakaz Zorik. That if you throw an object, for example, from the beginning of four Amos in Rishus Ram to the end of the Rishus Ram, and it lands on a Kosel, and if this Kosel, where the point that it lands on the Kosel is above Asar Tvachim, so that's not Rishus HaRabim, because Rishus HaRabim, as we said before, only goes up to 10 Tvachim, but if it lands below 10 Tvachim, on that Kosel, at a distance of 4 Amos, then that's the same thing as throwing something on the ground, you know, like you would take a bowling ball and throw it low in Rishus HaRabim, and it goes from 4 Amos from one distance to the other distance of 4 Amos. So now the Gemara wants to know, Zorak Arba Amos B'Rishus HaRabim Minolan D'Mechayev. In other words, the Gemara says the following. What we have in Hotzah and Achnasa, which we've already established, Hotzah is the Av and Achnos is the Tolda, those would apply to Zrika if he throws it from one Rishus to the other, because even though he's not carrying it from one Rishus to the other, but the logic is that he's relocating the object. It's his power and thrust, when he, the force of his throw, of his throwing, that takes the object from one Rishus to another Rishus. And therefore it makes sense, just like we had the Svara Mali Liyule Mali Lafuke, to establish that Hachnasa is also prohibited under the Malacha of Hotzah. Because what difference does it make if it goes out to Rishus HaRabim or it goes from Rishus HaRabim into Rishus HaYochid? In both cases, he's reestablishing the location of the object, Shini Rishus, changing the Rishus of the object. And Zrika accomplishes the same goal. And through the Zrika, he reestablishes the location of the object from one Rishus to the other. That's logically derived from Hotzah and Achnasa. But what about the case of Dalet Amos B'Rishus HaRabim? I mean, Dalet Amos B'Rishus HaRabim seems to be an entirely different kind of enterprise. I mean, he's not really changing the Rishus. He's just changing the location from the beginning of Rishus HaRabim to deep inside the Rishus HaRabim 4 Amos later. And that malacha in and of itself is very complicated. And we don't know the source for that malacha. And how much more so in the case of Zrika, which is again a little bit half a notch lower than the case of Hotzah where he carries it. So what we're looking for now is a source for this malacha, which we call Arba Amos B'Rishus HaRabim. And specifically in the case of Zrika, where he threw it and it landed 4 Amos later, which the Mishnah establishes he's chayav for that. Now, we're going to have to go back to the Mishkan. What we need is two things. We need a Svara and we need Mishkan. Svara we have. We could always say, what difference does it make whether he carries it or he throws it? He's always relocating the object. But we need also Mishkan. And do we find Zrika in the Mishkan? We don't know that they played basketball in the Mishkan, do we? So what were they throwing in the Mishkan? And specifically in the area of the Mishkan, which was a Rishus HaRabim. And, we have to add another condition, when they threw it, they meant it to land at a distance of 4 Amos. Where do we find that in the Mishkan? Amar Rav Yoshia, Shekein orge yurios, zarkin machtehem zeloze. Okay, there are a couple of assumptions here, one of which is clear as day, and that is that the urios, which were the coverings over the Mishkan, they were woven. And we had the weavers who were expert chachmei lev, these were the brilliant women who knew how to weave these beautiful tapestries, these curtains for the Mishkan. So that's the weaving process. In fact, if you recall when we learned the Malach of Hariga back in Klal Gadol and so forth, Perka Oreg, we mentioned the Hariga that was done for the Urios to create these curtains. Weaving with a loom and all the complications. Now, Rav Oshia makes another few assumptions here. The fact that they were orge hayurios, that's upgrade, that goes without saying. But he's saying that the utensils that they used would be passed on from one to the next, from one person to the next person, in Rishus HaRabim, the area, the vicinity of the Mishkan, by throwing it 4 hours. What was the object that he hones his attention on? What was thrown? I don't know why it was thrown, but what was thrown? And that is the machat, the needle. So immediately the Gemara has to fix this up a little. Orgim, you're talking about weavers? There's one utensil that was not used by the weavers. Machtin lomalahu. Why would they be using sewing needles? So this we have to fix up a little. Ella, let's rewrite the text of Rabbi Yoshia. She came tofrei yurios zorkin machteim zelazeh. We're not talking about the weavers, we're talking about the sewers. Rashi calls them embroiderers. In other words, on the urios there were certain beautiful shapes, and these were added on top of the urios. So the urios themselves, the curtains, were woven in a weaving process, but on top they would sew in various kinds of shapes, like the shapes of the kruvim, and that was done with a needle. Okay, so now at least we know who Rav Oshi is talking about. He's not talking about the argim, he's talking about the tofrim, tofrei hayurios. Now, in addition to Rashi's interpretation that I said that they would sew on certain shapes on top, we have two other possibilities, and these are described by the Rashash, one of the great commentaries, and he says, not the dmuyos hakruvim, but he says that they would attach one urea to the other. So in other words, they didn't have in one curtain that would cover the entire Mishkan. They had sections, panels, and they would sew together these panels. He has another interpretation that sometimes the bugs would attack the urios, and they would create holes in the urios. So in the curtains there were holes. We had to call the tofrim, the sewers, to sew up these holes in the urios. Okay, so we've got, we'll call it Rachel and Leah. So Rachel was sewing up the holes in the urios, and she finished her job. Now it's time for her to pass on the needle that she's finished with to Leah, who's next in line. Now, there are a number of possibilities here. Either there was a very limited invoice a limited number of machtim, so they had to sort of lend a machat from one woman to the other. Or alternatively, this is the style of tefirah, that if you have a kind of assembly line of people who are doing one after the other a tefirah, a sewing, that was the way they did it. They would pass on the needle from one person who finished at the head of the assembly line to the one behind him, and they would do it by throwing. That was the style. But now we have to ask another question. There's a basic premise here, which we don't know where we got it from, that when they threw these machtim, they threw it a distance of 4 amos. So the Gemara immediately asks, V'dilma gabi hadadi haviyasve. Maybe the two tofros who are sewing were sitting next to each other. Why do you assume that they were at a distance, right, social distancing, such that they had to throw it from one to the other? And the Gemara answers, Matu hadadi b'machtim. The work of sewing requires distance. Why? Because a machat is a bit dangerous. It's a bit sharp. And if they would sit too close to each other, and you know that when you sew something and you have a long thread, you know, the needle goes all the way up or all the way this way or that way, they had to distance themselves. So the Gemara says, would you require a 4 amah distance? That's a pretty serious distance. Dilma betoch arba v'yosvi. Maybe they sat at a distance, but it wasn't 4 amos. Maybe they were separated by 1 amah or 2 amos. And therefore the Gemara takes Rav Yoshia and his approach to finding Zrikas arba amos b'shus harabim and puts it on the back burners, picking up Ela Omer Rav Chisda. Shekain arge yurios zarkin buchiar biuria. So now we're going back to, if you notice, arge yuria. So back to the weaving process. And in the weaving process, there was a spool that was kept in a sign of a framework, a rectangular box, which had a piece of wood that went across it, and they would roll around the what's called the Erev thread around it. Now, there's the Shasi that we've discussed this in the past. The Shasi are all those threads that go lengthwise. And what they would do is they would pick up one and lower the other. And then the arev, which was the horizontal thread, would go under and over, under and over, as the warp, as we call it, the chassis, would be lifted one onto the other. And so what you did was you had this spool that was kept together in a utensil called a buchiyar. And then what you would do is you would throw that buchiyar. Now, the loom itself, from one side to the other, was four amos wide. So if they threw the buchiyar from one to the other, then it would be a throw of four amos. So the Gemara asks, wait a minute. Falo ugdo biyado. Zrika means that you throw something and it leaves your hand. It's no longer attached. But if you're holding on to a thread, holding on to the string, that's not called zrika. And here, they wouldn't throw the entire kli. What they would do is, they would hold on to it, hold on to the thread, and throw the kli, but they still were holding on to the thread. They never let go of the thread. So that's not zrika. So the Gemara answers, b'nichta basra. What happens is, when they got to the end of the thread, at that point, it was the last thread that they threw from one left side to the right side of the loom, and that was four amos. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. But where is this thread that they threw? It's together with its buchiyar, with its kli. It's between the upper warp threads and the lower warp threads, right? Because that's how you do the weaving. One goes up, one goes down. And that area is called a makom ptur. That area is not considered a rishus harabim. Rishus harabim is a place where anyone could go through. We may have discussed in the past, if you remember, like in the marketplace when people put up their wares, that's not a rishus harabim. Here also, when the buchiyar is going between one thread and the other, no one's going in there, and therefore it's not a rishus harabim. Elos, the Gemara now reformulates it, shekein orge yiriyos zorkin buchiyar l'shaw leah. What it means is that when one, let's call it a woman, would complete her process of weaving, meaning she did her job, now she's passing the baton, which in this case is called the buchiyar, over to the next woman in charge. She's going to now complete the weaving or pick up another curtain to start weaving it. And at this point, she would just simply throw the buchiyar. So once again, where were these two women situated? Where were they sitting? Dilma, perhaps, Gabi Adodi Haviyasve. Maybe they're sitting close to one another. How do you know it was four amos away? And the Gemara answers, Matu Adodi Bechefes. If they were sitting too close to each other, then they would interfere one with the other, because as you stretch out the threads of the Arev, then, you know, you get to the end of that section, and you're going to bang into the next one. So the Gemara asks, Vidilma Shalchufe, Havi Meshalchfe. Two questions the Gemara raises, two objections. Maybe they were at a distance, but not so far away one from the other. In other words, let's say, for example, we assume that there was a weaver here on the right, and there was a weaver here on the left, and maybe there was four amos in between. No, maybe there was a weaver that was forward, and there was a weaver right behind him. So when the weaver on the front side finished his or her job weaving, he would then pass on the buchiyar to the weaver right behind him. So it doesn't have to be a four amah distance. And furthermore, misha ili me'adadi. The very premise that you've been operating with the last half of an amud, namely that they borrowed one utensil from another and therefore they had to pass it on to the next person online. V'atani Luda, we have a person by the name of Luda, and he brought us a brisa, and the brisa interprets the Mishkan, and it says in the Mishkan, ish mi malachto asher hema osim, and this brisa thinks that the word Mimalachto is extra, and mimalachto hu oseh, v'eino oseh mimaleches chaviro, which means every one of the artisans and the professionals had their own utensils, And it was really Rav Chustik. It was very nice in the Mishkan. And nobody had to throw a needle or throw a buchyar, back and forth. So then we're back to our first question. Is Mavir Arba Amos Bishus Arabim Minolan Dechayev? We have not succeeded in finding in the Mishkan a situation where they threw something for Amos in Rishus Arabim. Ella. See, this, my friends, is a classic example of Talmudic methodology. We're going to go back and forth, analyzing it, and, objecting and deflecting and back and forth, until finally we get to an answer, which, had we known that answer from the get-go, we could have saved ourselves the entire Daf Gemara. And that is, Kol Arba Amos B'Shus Harabim Gemara Gemirale. When Moshe Rabbeinu spent 40 days up on the mountain of Har Sinai, he received not only the written Torah, but also the oral Torah. And that oral Torah included what we called Hilchos HaGemirlon, something that was taught to Moshe, and he learned up in the mountain of Sinai. And that's called Halacha Moshe V'Sinai. And included in that Halacha Moshe V'Sinai, an entire matrix of laws, was the law of carrying something for Amos B'Rishus HaRabim. And carrying something for Amos B'Rishus HaRabim in one form or another, whether he's carrying it or whether he's throwing it, that was the Hilchos HaGemirlon, that was the Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, and therefore you don't have to rack your brains and try to figure out where in the Mishkan was this Malacha implemented. It's totally unnecessary to do that. Why? Because it's Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. So what we have here is the following, just to summarize. We have Meleches Hotzah, which we derive from the Torah itself, when Moshe says, Vayaviru kol benachni, Vayikol yom mihavi, stop bringing your objects from your tent, Rishus HaYochid, out to Rishus HaRabim. We're going to derive the told of Hachnasa, because Mali Lav Yuli, Mali Lafuki, from the logic, it doesn't matter which direction. We're going to apply that Svara to Zrika, that again, when you relocate the object, it doesn't matter if you carry it or if you throw it. And as far as Dalet Amos B'Rishus HaRabim is concerned, that's not something that we could derive neither from a Pasuk, nor from a Svara, nor from the Mishkan. The only possibility is Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. And now, Rabbosai, we start a very interesting sugya unto itself. A small but humble sugya. Om Rav Yehuda M'Shmuel. At the end of Parshas Emor, the Torah records that they caught somebody who was quote-unquote Mekoshesh Eitzim. Moshe didn't know what to do with him. He goes to the Ribono Shel Olam and he gets the answer that he has violated the Shabbos and he's Chayav Skila, and that's the capital punishment. But Mekoshesh, what exactly was his Avera? We don't know. Rabbi Yehuda Amishmul says, I do know. You know what he was guilty of? Mavir Arba Amos B'Rishus HaRabim Hafa. He took wood and he carried it four Amos in Rishus HaRabim. And that's a tolda of Meleches Hotzah. However, we have another opinion, and that's expressed in a Braisa, Masis and Tana Tolesh Hafa. That the Mekoshesh actually detached growing wood from the ground, and that's a tolda of Meleches Kotzer, of reaping. A third opinion, Rav Acha Bered Rav Yaakov Omar, Me'amar Hava. There were pieces of wood, straw, strewn around on the ground. He gathered them together. According to some, he had to tie it into a bundle. That's a different discussion about Meleches Me'amar. And he was chayav for that Moloch. So, why is Lamaynaf Gemina? Very interesting. Okay, there was an episode that took place. You want to know exactly what were the details. Is there any Nafkamina? So Gemara answers the following. L'chida Rav. There'll be a Nafkamina as far as Rav is concerned. D'yoma Rav, Matsasi Megillah Starim Bei Rabbi Chia. Right, there was a hidden manuscript in the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Chia. And I, says Rav, saw that manuscript. Rav was a nephew of Rabbi Chia. Because of Bei, and it said the following. Very cryptic statement. Isi Ben Yehuda Omer, one of the Tanoim, Avos melachos arboim chasar achas, v'eino chayev ela achas. There are 39 melachos, he's only chayev one. So the Gemara completely rejects this. That couldn't be what it said in the manuscript of Isi ben Yehuda. Achas v'su lo. Nobody could say that you chayv only for one malacha. V'atnan, the Mishnah itself says, arboy, avos malachas arboyim chaser achas. And the Gemara is going to ask, well, why did you have to tell me the 39 malachas? Havina ba minyana lamali? Why'd you have to count it up? Om Rabbi Yochanan, shemason kulam behelim echad. If on one Shabbos, he forgot it Shabbos, and he violated all 39 malachas with one alama, chayv al kolachas v'yachas. He's going to be chayv 39 malachos. Amos, the Gemara says, no, we have to rewrite the text of Isi ben Yehuda. What he says was, eno chayv al achas mihem. That out of the 39, Isi ben Yehuda knew that there was one single malacha which you're not chayev for. Well, we don't know which malacha it is, but we can exclude possibly as many as three. That three are not on his list to be excluded from a chiyuv. Why? Because Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says in the name of Shmuel, that the Mekoshes was put to death because of Mavir Dalet Amos Shusarabim is Pshitale de Mavir Chayev. Certainly Mavir is not on Isi's list. It's not a candidate for being the one malach that you're not Chayev for because they put the Mekoshes to death for being Mavir Dalet Amos. Umas Nisan, according to the Braisa that says that his malach was Kotzer, is then Pshitale de Tole Shchayev. That certainly when you detach something from the ground, you're Chayev. Verav Achabar Yaakov, he says the Mekoshes was Ma'amir. Is pshitale de ma'amer chayev. Marsover ha'mias lo misafku, marsover ha'mias lo misafku. Now, as according to each shita respectively, you can cross off that malacha off the list. Tanu Rabbanan, who was the Mekoshesh? The Torah conceals it. Zet Slavcha. He was Slavcha, the father of the whole group of girls that came forward to get the Yerusha, the Chenu Omer. And how do I know this? Because in the parasha of Mekotzeis Eitzim, it says, Vayu b'nei Yisrael, b'midbar, vayimtzu ish. I'm sorry, I mentioned Parsha Zemo before, that was a mistake. This is in Parsha Shlach. It says that there was an ish that they found, and ulahalon, and later on in the parasha of Bnos Slavcha, it says, Avinu meis Bamidbar. So let's go back to the first pasuk. Vayu b'nei Yisrael bamidbar vayimtzu ish. So the word here that we want to focus on about this ish is he was bamidbar. And with regard to the Bnos Slavchad referring to their father, he died bamidbar. Malahal and Slavchad, just like he died by Midbar, our father, meaning Slavchad, is Afkan here too, in the parasha Mekoshesh Eitzim, when it says, Vayu b'nei Yisrael ba Midbar, and Vayim Tzu'ish, that person was Slavchad. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. Now Rabbi Akiva incurs the wrath of Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. This is Lashon Hara. Amalo Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra Akiva, bein kach u bein kach, ata osid litein es adin. You will be judged and condemned no matter what. What do I mean? Im kidvarecha, if you're correct, then atorah kisasaso, the Torah didn't reveal the name of Tzlofchad as the Mekoshesh, the ata megalo, so. And you're revealing that which the Torah wanted to conceal? Because if you tell me that it was Slavchad, it changes my, you know, he was a Michal Shabbos? That's what you're telling me about Slavchad? So even if you're telling me the truth, the Torah wanted to conceal that. V'im lav. And if you're not telling me the truth, atamotzi laz al oso tzaddik. Then you are slandering that tzaddik, the father of the Bnos Slavchad. So the Gemara asks on the top of Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph, and here's where we'll conclude for today, V'elaha, Hagamar Gzeira Shava. I mean, Gzeira Shava is also something that the Torah gave us to Darshan, so you can't hold Rabbi Akiva responsible for telling us about Gzeira Shava, about Midbar, about Midbar. And the answer is that Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, Gzeira Shava lo Gomar. He didn't have this Gzeira Shava. And if he didn't have this Gzeira Shava, he was justified in his attack and objection to Rabbi Akiva. Okay then, so we'll make a note that we're on the top of Daf Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph, tomorrow Mirz Hashem, 97a, And I wish everyone a great day. Thank you very much.